But we'll get to this one perhaps down the road a piece. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM. And as mentioned before, I'm Robert. This is a civil rights local show in which we talk about what rights there should be and what rights there aren't. And who knows, occasionally what rights there do seem to be developing. Going to give you an update on what happened last night. And I'm pleased to report from what I saw and what I heard. The answer was nothing untoward, nothing out of the ordinary at the Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression's 94th weekly hoedown, sip-in, play-on, and this one included a little bit of speechifying, too, in front of New Leaf Market. A group of musicians get together, they invite the public to come and play and sing with them, and they also invite them to help take back the spaces that have been reserved now for merchants, police, and those approved by them on the what were the public sidewalks in the downtown area. The downtown ordinances passed originally in 1994 under the impetus of former Mayor Neil Coonerty, Bookshop Santa Cruz owner, and then essentially intensified in their maliciousness in 2002 and 2003 by Porter and Riley, and of course followed up by Rotkin and Matthews and Fitzmaurice, and essentially the entire city council that's now sitting on the council has backed those ordinances that criminalize you for sitting down on 95% of the sidewalks downtown on Pacific Avenue. You have to be 14 feet from a building, which rules out, as I said, 95% of the sidewalks for sitting, and since benches have been removed, that also removes seating area there. It's part of the kind of the general give the police the power to do whatever they want, let them sort out the problems and deal with them, just give them sort of a blank check. And this is the we trust our police approach, we fund our police approach, and then we destroy all oversight bodies that might look over our police, like the Citizens Police Review Board, however inadequate it was. It's kind of an old message I'm putting out here, and the reason I mention it is because last night, the 94th SAFE event, Street Performers Against Foolish Enforcement, as I like to call SAFE, again, officially named Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, it had a sort of an untoward incident the week before, and you heard something about that incident. I guess Coral Brun and Greg talked about it on the air here on Sunday and on Thursday last week, in which turned out the police were rather heavy-handed. kind of cooked up some laws that didn't exist, broke up the event for half an hour, and threatened to come back and harass some more. And so we kind of had a little training session last night, and police didn't come back. And that was great. The police have generally steered pretty clear of this event, perhaps under direction from higher officials, perhaps out of a sense that this is something the community enjoys and is indeed a positive influence downtown. And it's every week the safe musicians violate the downtown ordinances. They continue to play for more than an hour, which is illegal under the Porter-Rotkin move-along law. And they also play within 10 feet of an enclosed eating area, which is also illegal. But that area was originally public space, and their intention was to return it to the public, not with the intention of driving away business or driving away merchants or monopolizing the space, but again, restoring it to its community use. And that's what SAFE hopefully will continue to do. I got an interesting email from Joe Williams, who was one of the founding members of SAFE and a guitarist in his own right as well as a peace activist. He forwards this email: "Dear musicians and street buskers, Kathy Bisbee from the Downtown Commission emailed me because the commission is looking for input from musicians and street buskers about the downtown ordinance and its impact on you. She would appreciate hearing from you as soon as possible. The questions are below." And Kathy Bisbee can be reached at okathy@cruzio.com, O-K-A-T-H-Y, at cruzio.com. And this is a downtown ordinance study by Julie, Jim, and Kathy, November 1st. One, overview of the downtown ordinances when they came into effect. In fall 2002, Santa Cruz City Council passed an ordinance to limit the time, place, and manner where solicitations can occur on Pacific Avenue. Locations are designated for musicians and street performers at a distance of 10 feet away from buildings, street furniture, phone booths, and change machines, and 4 feet away from pedestrian walkways. That's not actually entirely accurate. I believe it's 4 feet away from street furniture, phone booths, 50 feet away from change machines, and 10 feet away from everything else. But you get the idea. Some people have seen positive changes. Others think it negatively impacted downtown. What do you think? Please give us some examples to justify your responses. If you are a musician or street performer, how has the ordinance influenced your activities downtown and or those of others you know? So I would like to invite people to call the show if they'd like to call here, call on the air, and discuss how you feel about these ordinances and what you've seen in terms of how they've changed or improved, degraded, what you will, the situation downtown. You can give a call at 427-3772. That's the phone number here. 427-FRSC. We are Free Radio Santa Cruz. You can also email. You can email Kathy at okathy@cruzio.com. But if you want to get on the air, best thing to do is to call here, 427-3772. There's also a chat room, which I'm about to open up, and sometimes actually includes a few chatters. That's pagesincolor.com. And you go to www.pagesincolor.com, which is what I'm doing, or trying to do, actually, as my fingers type out the wrong words, but now I think I got it. You click on the word chat, which is at the top of the page. You scroll down to the bottom of the page, and you write your chat moniker in there. I'm Robert. And you're on the chat room. And I can pass on to the community any questions you have, particularly if the phone lines are full. And again, that's pagesincolor.com or 831-427-3772. It's a number to call if you want to be talking about this kind of stuff. And I think it's nice that somebody, I think it's Colleen Douglas, has sent off this email to Joe Williams. These were some sort of more conservative street musicians who were originally rather concerned about the downtown ordinances. You may remember in 2002 there were some massive protests in the summer against the ordinances, which, of course, are not only designed to go after street performers. In fact, they are really not designed to go after street performers. Street performers are just caught up in the net. They're designed to give the police the power to go after young people they don't want hanging out in groups, homeless people they think offend the merchants and or the tourists. activists whose political activism is of the wrong political color, such as those of us who are outside the Pacific Trading Company protesting that company's essentially lobbying for public funds to remove public spaces when they moved a fence 4 inches to remove all the sitting space on the large planter in front of the Pacific Trading Company back in 2003. So, what do you think of these ordinances? Give me a call, 427-3772. What's your view? Have you been here for a couple years? Maybe you've seen how things have changed or not. I, of course, have a strongly negative view, but that might not be your view. You might feel that actually things have improved. You might feel that the police are doing a fine job, that the idea of expanding police power and police discretion, what I call an endless blank check, is a good idea. I mean, after all, it's being done nationally with such things as the Patriot Act and national security letters and renditions and camps in Eastern Europe where people are sent to CIA headquarters so they can be interrogated, certainly not tortured. The United States would never do such a thing, but so that they can be, we can stop the next 9/11. You know, all of the, so everything is working well, as the administration likes to say. And it's not just the administration in Washington. We have an administration here in Santa Cruz. It's right now Mayor Mike Rotkin, and I presume it's going to be Mayor Cynthia Matthews. I could be wrong. That's what happened last time around. This is sort of a repeat of 96-97. And Tuesday's city council meeting, which will be coming up in 5 days, they elect a new mayor from within themselves. And last time, Rotkin in 96 was followed by Matthews in 97. Could and probably will happen again, although I think it's the top vote-getter, and I don't have the list of who was the top vote-getter right here handy, so I can't really tell you. That happens in the evening. No business takes place at City Council at that time, in case you're interested in attending. In the past, they've opened up the Civic Auditorium and provided some little treats for the public. This time, they're just the council's going to go stuff its faces at the Chianti at the corner of Cathcart and Pacific, where I guess the Poet and the Patriot, Cat and Canary used to be, on the corner there. And you can go if you're willing to pay your way in. And that's, of course, to deal with the budget problems of our city. And the community is no longer being subsidized at that happy event where we get to celebrate a new mayor, or actually an old mayor. These people have been endlessly recycled and continue to be. But you can give them a piece of your mind from the sidewalk. But don't try playing music, because if you play music between those fenced-off areas and the curb, that's illegal. Actually, it happens a lot anyway, of course, and also happens a lot. People stand there with a sign saying, or sit down with a sign saying, you know, we'll work for food, or why kid you, I'm looking for a drink, or give me some green, man, whatever, panhandling, as they call it, or spanging. It's illegal to sit down with a sign any time of the day, anywhere in Santa Cruz. That's the Rotkin-Matthews law. Look it up. And Rotkin, of course, will tell you, oh, well, yeah, but it's not enforced. Well, the police can enforce it whenever they want. And it's obviously something that should be changed. It's interesting, because of the Eager Beaver, hyper-zealous officers like Pam Bechtel, who's a CSO downtown. You may have seen her in light blue, a chunky woman with dark glasses who runs around ticketing bicyclists and harassing people about their so-called unattended property, as she did to one of the musicians with SAFE, I guess it was 5 days ago, during Labor Day, Veterans Day, when the vets were having their thing outside the vets hall and musician Meriwether Mike went in to play. He found himself being threatened with a ticket when he got outside because he had left his property there not unattended, but in fact, he said, according to the account I recall, watched by another person. But no, not according to the new rules, and it's amazing how police like to extend, even when the city council gives them everything they want and more, the police go further. Not really with any malicious aims in mind. People who want to control you and make you a more picturesque or less problematic part of the scene. In their minds, they want to help out the city. They're really just trying to assist everybody. But, of course, that's what happens when people try to manage other people's lives and make decisions of that kind for them. You get bad situation. You get a situation where basic rights are ignored and denied, and you get anger, hostility, frustration, and the denial of the basic liberties that we all need to have in order to flourish as human beings. And some people say, well, hey, what the hell difference does it make if you can ask for a dime on Pacific Avenue or if you can sit down? These are all small things that add up to bigger things. And they affect the quality of life around us. And they also tend to indicate the kind of gentrification agenda that the Redevelopment Agency and the Downtown Association are pushing in Santa Cruz. So there's a survey being done about the downtown ordinances 3 years later. And if you're interested, you can also leave a message on the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's my number. Press the pound key and skip the message, which is a bit old, but still pretty relevant. And I will kind of take note of what you've said, maybe pass it on the next show, maybe pass it on to Kathy Bisbee, who's one of the sort of a... She was in the, I guess, the higher levels of SCAN at one time, Santa Cruz Action Network, the group that elected, unfortunately, most of the current city council in the old days. But I'm not sure where she's at now, and I'm not sure what the Downtown Commission is doing now, so I may have to check into that and let you know. And while I'm working on all that, maybe what I can do is put on a few tapes so we can actually hear some street interviews and hear what's actually happening outside, or has been happening in the last couple weeks. So that's what I bring into the studio. And I guess what I'm going to do. But, of course, to do that, I'm going to have to do a little bit of shifting around here. So that tape is a little fast. Let's go back to a little music, and I will prepare a little better and be back with you in just a moment.
Thank you. This one's a little more wordy. I'm calling it A Night Among Us.
We also have a new Huff member here, or at least certainly an onlooker checking out what the Huff scene is like. Your name, sir?
My name is Ron Cutler.
And Ron, you're a second round at the River Street Shelter.
Yes, I'm staying there for another glorious 30-day stay.
And you previously were working in a somewhat more specialized field?
Well, during the Vietnam War time, I was a resin research and fiberglass expert. I worked for a company called Velcon Filters, which stands for Velocity Control. We made filters that filtrated and coalesced jet fuel, JP4.
And how long have you been employed recently?
No, I haven't been employed for 4 years now, thanks to my misfortunes, mostly my mouth.
And what do you mean by that?
Well, I'm highly opinionated, and I like to share it with anybody that's close by, and my mouth has gotten me into a lot of problems. If you could see this nose of mine, you would understand what we're talking about.
Somewhat breath broken?
Somewhat. It can't even be corrected anymore. But
it gives you great character. You know?
Thank you very much. It's a great break.
So you've been to jail a number of times? Or?
Yes, I have. All the guards there know me by first name basis. In fact, they enjoy my company there. However, they won't take me anymore because they need the beds there for real criminals.
So the last time you were in jail was?
I got out on March 18th.
And you were there for what crime?
Two probation violations. One of them was this broken nose, and the other one was my attempt to break someone else's nose.
And this because of a difference of opinion, or because your safety was attacked, or what was the reason?
Well, one of them was because a person was homesteading in one of my neighbor's cabins up by Boulder Creek. He's currently in prison. And the other one, this guy is a liar and a cheat, and he has owed me money for 4 years and lied about it. So when he was pushing me out of his little domicile, I was promptly hitting him in the nose and taking a couple doors out of his place, too.
You're a man with a temper, is that fair to say?
My mother says that I ought to keep my mouth shut at least, and the police say, Ron, we can't have you keep doing this. Yes, I have a bad temper, but I'm learning how to control it through anger management, medication, and practice.
Punching bags as well, perhaps? A little boxing in the...
No. I have...
Death in the Afternoon by Ernest Hemingway. He was a boxer, and it's legal to do what you did in a rink.
Well, I don't want to get hit in the face anymore, whether it's legal or not, because I'm working on a new way of life, and that's called not getting any fights.
So you've been... this is the second time at the River Street Shelter. A couple years ago you were there, or...?
I just set a record. I was there for 30 days about 4 weeks ago.
And you for your second 30?
Yes, I had been promised a 15-day extension, and it turned into a 30-day extension. I'm trying to get into, the housing next to it.
That's the Rebelly Family Shelter?
No.
The Page Smith Community House.
Page Smith, so I can get some therapy and counseling along with my other problems.
Now, do you spend much time living outdoors in vehicles or camping?
Yes. I have property up above Boulder Creek that I've owned for 30 years.
On your own property, then, you've been outdoors?
Yes, I have.
So you haven't really been in a situation where you've been, you're not really home, if you're not homeless, you're, and you're not even propertyless, but you're taking, you're, go ahead.
Let me explain. While I was in jail, the fine woman that I bought my property from and have paid taxes for over 30 years went to court and contested the sale of her property to me, and she won by default. Her son is currently on it, and I do believe that one of the detectives in the marijuana division here is up there confiscating his growing processes there. So currently I am restricted from my own property because of a, what do they call them, to stay away?
Restraining order.
Restraining order against me to stay away from this woman and her son, and her son currently is residing on my property. The property papers are all with Santa Cruz Bail Bonds, who is supporting me by finding a lawyer so I can get my property rights back.
So
Are you doing a lot of medication? I notice you're sweating. How are you feeling?
Well, I'm sweating because I just rode a bicycle over here, and I haven't ridden a bicycle in 30 years.
I hope you can survive this. We don't want to have you collapse the table here.
I won't be collapsing until I find out how much the licensing or the registration fee is. I just found out, this is for everybody's benefit, that you get your bikes registered at the fire departments.
Weird. You came to this meeting because you were approached by the incorrigible Chris Brozda, who is running for supervisor and Congress. Chris, you may not know, has been arrested several times for distributing his literature, once downtown, and I guess he was cited here yesterday. What's your reaction to that? Did he approach you in a fashion that terrified you and made you want to run the other way?
No, not at all. I heard him speaking to another person, and I patiently waited until he was done, and then I spoke to him, whereupon I received three sheets of paper typewritten out explaining his stance on many issues and his experiences with our glorious Santa Cruz Police Department.
And your reaction to what you read and what you heard was?
Well, do you need any help?
So you are one of his first campaign workers?
First crony.
So Chris's cronies. You've joined the Chris's cronies gang here. Let me, again, we've been talking with
Ron Cutler.
And Ron, I'll ask you more as the years pass, no doubt. But I want to get the details on Chris's latest citation yesterday. Chris, and I know we went through this earlier with the machine not working, I apologize. You were cited by Officer Dan Brierley for criminally distributing literature, in the county building right near where we're sitting right here, outside the elevator on the first floor?
Right, and just prior to that, I was chased out of the courthouse by the bailiffs.
And in the courthouse, you were beating up prospective jurors, crapping on the floor.
Beating their ears, trying to get them to see.
You were screaming at the top of your lungs.
At the bailiffs, on the way out, I did say you bombed my grandfather's home and you drove a million Serbs out of their homes. I did say that.
You blamed the poor bailiffs for... Is this some? You have some knowledge of a bailiff actually being a bombardier?
Well, I like it when the police or bailiffs take my literature so they know what I'm doing. And they didn't take my literature.
You were pissed with them for not taking your literature.
No, I was upset just about being asked to leave the courthouse. I think it should be a place where we should be able to pamphleteer.
I agree. What was the reason that they asked you to leave the courthouse? Did someone take exception to your literature? Or?
Someone may have. He had described himself as to the right of Attila the Hun. And,
those were his words?
Those were his words.
Now, your literature that you're distributing does not talk about juries, doesn't talk about pending cases. It doesn't. It talks more about issues around the county generally that wouldn't have any bearing on trials, right?
It does talk about two class action suits that I've mailed to the ACLU, one on behalf of the homeless.
But these aren't pending suits. They're not currently filed, right?
I wish they were. They're not yet.
Therefore, to claim, for example, that you're distributing literature in any way would engage in jury tampering is not a legitimate concern.
No, that's not it at all.
What did the deputy say was the basis for their not wanting you to be there?
That General Services has a statute that says you can't pamphleteer or solicit money in the county building, which is extremely strange, as General Services is actually right next to the legislative offices. One would assume at the courthouse, a public place, and in the supervisor's domain, you could hand out political literature. This is not the case. The First Amendment is gutted in the county building.
And while there is sort of a special ooh quality of the courthouse, because they're, engaged in the impartial administration of justice there, and they don't want you to interfere with that by distributing, let's say, jury nullification literature, although that's illegitimate as far as I'm concerned, provided you're not actually talking about a specific pending case. And even then, I think there's a question, provided you don't target jurors. You left the courtroom corridors. You were not in the courtrooms themselves.
No, I wasn't.
Were you speaking in a loud voice to any of the people who were passing by or giving your literature to? I have not observed you doing this.
No, I'm noticing that bees are attracted more to honey than to vinegar lately.
a wise perception, which I may learn from someday. Who knows? Though politicians tend to work best with cattle prods, I notice.
No, I think we work better when we use reason and not force.
Well, tell it to the dead in Iraq. But let's move right along. You then moved over to the elevator where you, or near the elevator where you gave out literature. And for how long were you able to do this yesterday?
About an hour and a half.
And was there again an Attila the Hun like individual who didn't like your literature and complained, or what happened?
No, and I did saunter out because the women from General Services came by and motivated the expulsion, and I did saunter out to the front of the building, and people were receptive to the idea. I was telling them I was being cited for passing out literature, and several people said you should have the right to do it in the building.
So finally, when you were then approached finally at the elevator by your favorite officer, Dan Bradley, who had previously not just cited you, but arrested you in front of the Pete's Coffee some weeks ago?
They did, and they did a violent takedown in the jail that caused me to hurt a ligament that's actually just healing.
But that was not Brierly, that was officers in the jail, right?
Right, that was the jailers.
Right. And you were actually all charges after one public defender told you there was no hope for you, you had to plead to these resisting arrest and disturbing the peace charges. When you walked in, suddenly the charges evaporated?
Evaporated the next morning, yes.
Right. You suspect that this might have been because of the videos that existed both of Brierly's arrest and of subsequent mistreatment in the jail?
Yes.
So here you were again facing not the same charge, not disturbing the peace, but show me that ticket if you could again, that citation which you showed me before.
I'd like to get to the actual content of the material I was handing out.
Well, I know you would, but I'm frankly more interested in regardless of whatever material you were handing out, and you were talking about your platform and your concerns about forced drugging, forced medication, political collusion.
The fact that ECT is legal in the county against
electroshock.
Against the will of the patient.
This is Title 111, Section 500, County Policy Procedures. And again, it just seems like Dan Brierly, 174. And you are... It's an infraction. I would encourage you to disqualify referee Mulligan, not Mulligan, now it's a basket, under 170.6 CCP. Take it up to a court up here and then demand a court trial on the issue.
Probably an infraction, so I can't have a trial.
You can have a court trial. You can't have a jury trial.
Oh, I can have a judge hear it?
The judge will hear it and find you guilty.
Right.
But still, you know, it's a process.
Well, the First Amendment is gutted also at Cabrillo College.
Tell me about that.
I just was suspended from class with three doctorates teaching ancient history, basically for handing out campaign.
You had the three doctorates, or?
No, they did. I have more class than them, but it's not in one thing.
I don't understand. You mean the doctor, the professor who ran the class who has three doctorates decided he didn't want you giving out literature in his class?
Three professors, each with one doctorate, didn't want me handing out literature in class.
And did they explain to you the basis on which they were making this concern? Was it because they felt you were disrupting the class?
They did think I was disrupting the class, and I was found guilty of it and suspended.
And in what way were you, in their view, disrupting the class?
Just handing out campaign literature was considered a disruption.
Were you doing so? I mean, did it interrupt what their own presentations? Were you giving it to unwilling people? What was the situation?
No, I was in the beginning of class, before the professor got there, I handed out the paper. He very sternly scolded me, castigated me.
What did he say about that?
He just said it's not allowed, and they control strictly time, place, and manner. See, I wanted, which guts the First Amendment on the campus, I wanted to challenge the class. I was asking them, negotiating to challenge the class.
And that's Chris Brosnett from about a month ago. Unfortunately, some other more arrests have followed. While Chris's sounds pretty reasonable in this interview, we subsequently had a shouting match from Chris when he came to a Huff meeting several weeks ago. He was arrested the next week when he came to a Huff meeting at the county building. And I believe he was arrested again today and taken to the psych ward where he has been forcibly medicated. I'm not sure. We may hear from him, and he has, in fact, called in on these issues. However, on the line right now, I have with me Bob Patton. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Robert. Thanks for putting me on the air here for a moment. I wanted to announce the upcoming event that the Human Rights Organization here in Santa Cruz has put together, and that event is going to be Saturday, November 19th, at the Loudon Nelson Center, which is downtown Santa Cruz at 301 Center Street. What we're doing is trying to open up some critical space for community to talk about some of the things you've been mentioning on your program, and you regularly do mention human rights, public use of public space. And as many of your listeners know, the established politics here is not exactly proving themselves to be trustful or to solve the problem. So this event, once again, Saturday, it'll be starting at 3:30. We'll open to the public, although from 2:30 till 4:30, we have the kitchen. So we have Carol Moon, who is cooking vegan. And actually, at that point, if anybody's interested in doing any cooking or kitchen work, we need volunteers there, particularly if someone has some oversized pots and pans. I guess the Loudon Nelson Center does not offer any pots and pans, so we're a little short of, you know, large pans and maybe even cookie sheets. So someone could call me about that.
And how can they reach you, Bob?
And I'll give the number 425-4467. Leave a message. I'll get back to you shortly, and I should be able to pick them up Friday night or Saturday if anyone does have something and themselves does not want to come to the event.
See this 3:30 Saturday event flyer kind of posted on the wall here at Free Radio. Activism, politics, and homelessness. Speakers will address the tough questions about Santa Cruz liberal politics and homeless rights. What speakers are those, Bob?
Kate Wells, well-known local human rights and civil rights attorney, handling cases including one or more of yours, and she'll be speaking on the current status of the Santa Cruz downtown ordinances, which we all consider them being anti-homeless and a lot of us consider they in violation of the Bill of Rights. And hopefully in question and answer time, we can talk about some legal strategies, and we will cover ground over some of the legal efforts we've made before. And then Linda LeMaster is going to be speaking on the Housing Now, going to be speaking on the homeless crisis and how that affects the community of homeless and poverty people. At the event, what we're hoping to do is open up some critical space. I mean, some space for to confront the critical issues. Something obviously we don't get from our leadership. And when the politicians don't pay attention to homelessness or poverty, then the press pays no attention to homelessness and poverty. And then people are left confused and unable to be able to make proper decisions. So we want to bring issues like that forward. And we will be hoping to get some papers in the sense of projects or destinations to do something either in the political or in the legal aspect of moving forward on this. And there is a little bit of seed money. So if we get some good ideas, good projects, good papers on projects, then we'll review those and put some effort to moving them forward.
Well, I know that...
I'm hoping Huff's going to be there.
I think Huff will come huffing and puffing.
Okay.
Human rights...
Maybe take the puffing around by the bushes or something.
Huff, of course, meets every Wednesday. We're talking about moving our meeting to 10:30 rather than 8:30, but... Right now, we're still meeting at 8:30 at the county building between the county building and the courthouse, right outside by the coffee we can have a coffee clatch out there, right in the atrium area. And you guys, Human Rights Organization, I guess won't be meeting on Saturday. You'll be meeting at Loudoun Nelson Center instead of your usual place out at the Homeless Service Center, right?
Right. We'll probably put up a sign. There may be somebody there to direct people who have haven't heard that the event is happening to go to the Loudoun Nelson Center as opposed to the Homeless Service Center. And actually, on the following week, the week of Thanksgiving, I don't think there's going to be an actual meeting of the Human Rights Organization due to the holiday situation. But other members may have different ideas, and I haven't talked to them specifically about that. Mm-hmm. We do meet at between 1:45 and 2:45 each Saturday, other than the coming Thanksgiving weekend.
Now, according to the flyer that's posted in the studio, this is going to be at this Saturday event at the Loudoun Nelson Center, a street art show, open mic for street performers, music, and poetry?
Yes, the open mic so far is pretty crowded. It seems like quite a few people are going to show up that want to do the music. But we're encouraging as many participants as possible. The art show, we'll see who shows up with that. I've got vague commitments on some people to show. If people do have items they want to show in the way of art, craft, or just like that, then we're prepared to do that. We'll have some coated fencing that you can hang your artwork on without damaging it.
Uh-huh.
And there'll be Entertainment for All by Jack and Jay, who are two well-known local musicians. I think actually they were playing down on Pacific Avenue last night, and they had a really good time going over some of their politically political protest songs.
Earlier I was reading I don't know if you've been listening to the show. I was reading an email about downtown commissions looking for input on the downtown ordinances 3 years later. You probably haven't been listening to the show.
I was listening off and on. My radio is not picking it up well.
So I'm going to come and shake you like a... Well, we'll see.
I got you on a computer now. As long as this stays connected, mm-hmm. I'll be able to tell what's going on. But I didn't hear that particular part of it.
Well, what I'm saying is that that they're looking for input on the downtown ordinances, and since you will be having some street performers there, you might want to put down a place for people to record their thoughts. We can pass them on to Kathy Bisbee of the Downtown Commission, who supposedly is looking for an update on how street performers feel about the downtown ordinances 3 years later.
I think that sounds like a great idea. If you remind me or someone listening here now at the event wants to get a clipboard or a sign-up sheet, comments, make some handmade postcards, we'll go ahead and mail them out.
Okay. Sounds good. Again, I guess this is at 3:30, or you can come a little earlier and help with the cooking at 2:30?
2:30, kitchen opens up, 3:30.
Loudoun Nelson on Saturday, right?
Right. Now, the open mic might start a little earlier. It depends on how quick we can start getting setting up stuff out of the kitchen.
Okay.
But then Jack and Jay on at 4:30 or so. It's when we'll see. We'll go with the flow.
Sounds good.
I want it to be a little party of ideas and stimulation also. I'm not a party, but I want to embrace quite a few people to be involved. And I've got a lot of calls. So.
And you will, of course, have your medical marijuana booth as well, I'm sure.
My medical marijuana booth? Well, I do not engage in that.
I would hope not. For heaven's sake.
I wouldn't discourage anyone with any groups that are wanting to help. I consider that a health issue. And if people have health issues around homeless and poverty, I encourage them to come, especially any groups or even individuals who want to get the word out about what they're doing.
Fair enough.
Yeah, and just one little statement of direction. This is going to be about the victims of these anti-homeless laws. So I'm not trying to discourage people from coming in from different sectors of the community, but I want to remember, people remember, this is about the victims, not about the sides. So can we all just get along?
Hey.
All right, Robert, well, thanks.
Hey, thank you, Bob. Listening to Bob Patton of the Human Rights Organization, and it's Saturday. Come on down. And you can also call in if you want to talk about this or other things you've heard here. Here's an interesting ad for the Students for Justice. It's a De Anza Club concerned with social and political issues. Not sure what a De Anza Club is, but to get involved, if you're interested in civil disobedience on November 11th, of course, this is already passed, come to our meeting. I guess I missed it. I think Students for Justice is the same group. I'm not sure if it's the same group or not, but there was a group that picketed one of the officials' homes of the Metro Transit Board and was roundly castigated. These students were roundly castigated in the Sentinel, and the bus drivers were roundly denounced, even though they weren't part of the picketers. But I was impressed that students actually went out of their way to try to bring the issue to the other officials who were stonewalling. Although, admittedly, it was I myself don't go to people's homes. The strike was a serious disruption, and a lot of us felt that the Metro Board bore a heavy responsibility for that, at least as much as the union, if not more. Anyway, phone lines are open, 427-3772. If you'd like to call, you can do that. I was kind of giving you an update on Chris Brozda, with whom I played an interview, which was actually, it's now several weeks old, and Chris is a man with a lot of strong ideas, a very very prolific writer. You can go to his website if you want. I don't know if I actually have it available, but if you're interested in his website, you can contact the Huff phone line, 423-HUFF, and I'll pass the information on to you. I think if you Google for Brozda, B-R-O-Z-D-A, you can find it. Chris, I'm concerned mainly with heavy-handed treatment by police and psychiatric authorities towards people who are pushing the envelope, and Chris certainly is pushing the envelope, and in some cases goes over the line, although, I mean, I guess somebody is actually harassing or threatening someone, as I've got to say, Chris has occasionally felt to me like he's doing personally. That is a matter which can be addressed as a criminal matter, and probably should be, instead of having kind of hauling the person off to the psych ward, dumping him in the back, and shooting him up with drugs. But there are those who might suggest that that's a more humane alternative. I don't think so. And as I said, we may hear from Chris later in the evening. As I said, I heard from him earlier. He's on the psych ward at Dominican. I don't have a number for him at the moment, but if somebody wants to call in with the Dominican payphone, that's something that you can do. And perhaps it's always good to provide contact and communication with people on those wards, because it's a pretty isolated situation and a pretty frightening one if you're in the grip of people who are running those wards. It's not even that they are evil people, but what they're doing is so invasive, and it's so thoroughly entrenched as an institutional procedure that it's a frightening thing to behold. So there are other things happening as I look at indie media, which I regularly both announce and denounce on this program. I announce it because it's got a lot of good local information. I denounce it because it makes very bad decisions. At least it did in the case, as made one very bad decision in the case of my producer, Becky Johnson, who's been banned from posting homeless stories on indie media because they, well, you probably should talk to indie media about why they've done it, and we had a long discussion about this last time. But censoring people, even if you can, and they can, they're not the government, they're a private group, they can do what they want, I think is counter to the spirit and detracts from their credibility. And I wrote them a letter about that issue a couple days ago, as a number of other people did, activist John Vance, activist Thomas Levitt, also wrote letters to indie media suggesting they were way off base by deleting Becky Johnson's posts, particularly on homeless issues. And better to say, you know, to be very specific about why you don't want a particular post. I mean, if somebody's being abusive or endlessly repetitive, then you say that. But indie media seems to have taken a more high-handed stance. And I know that they have a hard time in terms of they have a limited number of people who are, you know, putting together a good website otherwise in many respects. Still, that doesn't excuse essentially ostracizing and silencing a voice in the community because you don't like their position on the Israeli-Palestinian issue. So that sucks. However, looking at a couple things coming up on Indie Media, and I see there's a stand-down and war-at-home panel, which I'm now going to. Actually, the action is going to be happening tomorrow, Friday, November 18th, at the Military Recruitment Center, 41st Avenue, 3 to 5 p.m. That's public sidewalk on 41st. Recruiting Center is on the right-hand side of the frontage road next to Highway 1. That's actually not quite accurate. It's on the right-hand side of the 41st Avenue, which is not the frontage road, but which is a 41st Avenue out there in Capitola. But it should be fairly easy to find. You'll see a bunch of people on the sidewalk from 3 to 5. It's on the next to Highway 1 and Claire's Street across from the Master Car Wash. Join us, they say, bring large signs that are easy to read by those passing by. Photos and posters that show the dead and injured, ours and theirs, gongs, chimes, simple hand drums. We'll have a handbill with current stats and information on the human and economic costs of the war to hand out to motorists and pedestrians. And in many communities around the country, apparently on this national stand down day, it sounds like stand down week because they had something last Sunday as well, and I heard that there was another stand down event on Tuesday. At least that's what a Huff member told me. If you're considering doing civil disobedience, please come prepared. We're committed to nonviolent principles, and there are various groups supporting it. Stand down is a term used by the military for days when they have training, reviews, and so forth, standing down from formal duties. And again, that's tomorrow, November 18th, out on 41st Avenue. It's a block or two from the freeway as you head toward the beach on the right side, right before the, I think it's Burger King, which I think is Claire's Street, if I'm not mistaken. Anyway, I will probably be there. If I'm not up north, I may have to be up north, but if I'm not, I'll probably be checking that out. Encourage you to check it out. Then on Saturday, there's another event coming up, the Unplanning Meeting. This is an attempt to actually encourage a people's celebration this upcoming New Year's Eve. It's going to be 6 to 8 p.m. in the Big Yellow House at 742 North Branson 40 Avenue, 6 to 8 p.m., again, the Big Yellow House, 742 North Branson-Forte. Don't forget to tell two people and bring them to the meeting. It's different but similar hopes for last night. Blowing minds, revolution, political involvement, DIY culture, community, self-reliance, great music, bone-shaking percussion, and a rollicking good time. Bring snacks, alcohol, other treats if you can. Come with ideas for targeting our recruiting efforts to groups doing awesome things. Bicycle foie, drum bands, political groups, clowns, pirates, street theater. So far committed to last night, fire dancers, samba, the opera lady, village drum circles, the man in black, stilt walkers, the tiny instrument band, bicycles, clowns, pirates, spies, and street theater. Print some handbills off the site and pass them out before the meeting. If you print the handbills double-sided, cut into quarters, bring ideas. And again, this is going to be Saturday night. And it's planning for December 31st, this last night Santa Cruz. Do-it-yourself parade and celebration. No city sponsorship, no corporate donors, no... What is that guy's name? Smith is his last name. He was the guy who banned politics from the parade, so there were no Iraqi, U.S. out of Iraq signs allowed, or U.S. stay in Iraq signs allowed, for that matter. He was the one who sabotaged the parade the year before, again trying to remove all unseemly, actually pro-Santa Cruz-ish kind of, typically Santa Cruz-ish type of activity in terms of political messages. So this year it's going to be people doing their own thing, and if you want to be a part of it, check it out. And again, that's going to be, you go online, check www.lastnightdiy.org, all one word, lastnightdiy.org. And I'm actually going to, I'm not sure if I'll be at that meeting, but if I'm around Santa Cruz on December 31st, I'll probably be out there with camera and tape recorder babbling away, and or at least listening, maybe catching the babble of some other folks. So check that out. And check this out.
We're talking with
Ted Fleming, alias Bear.
Also known as the mayor of...
The mayor, the gracious mayor of San Lorenzo Park, Santa Cruz.
Now, mayor, what's the story? Are police harassing people early in the morning as they try to sleep here more than in the past?
Well, my opinion on that, and my cabinet's with me here, what are they called? And we're going to just get rid of all the police. We're going to keep three police just so somebody can shoot the damn gun.
A food donation has arrived here. All right, yeah, I'm good, but please, grab that pizza. That's my advice.
Yeah, it's a hard job being the mayor, but, you know, I get stoned a lot doing it.
Well, that's good. Better stoned than...
My incumbents, they donate to the...
You're also a musical mayor. You've been known to play a tune or two.
Somebody broke my guitar. She was drunk. She fell on my guitar and broke it. So, no, right now I'm without. If anybody out there in Radio Land wants a good musician to have a guitar, any old thing...
Well, why don't you come around to the SAFE event tonight? I think it's SAFE 89 or something, and in front of New Leaf Market. It's between 6 and 10 on Wednesdays. And I'm not guaranteeing you can get a guitar. But, yeah, I know you have. You know, do some play.
I used to play at Rosie's Ice Pub.
They'll let you borrow your, more pizza.
Yes, please. Come on, I can bring it to you.
Hey, Pizza Man is delivering pizza.
Come on, man, get up.
Well, I'm lazy. I'm trying to politic, and I'm not doing very good.
And... the folks are being fed at least on this particular day.
Everybody got one?
Much thanks, man.
That's good. Thank you, bro.
So anything else happening in the park we should know about? Folks on the radio or listening who would, that sort of thing. Are the ducks treating you well?
No, we treat them well.
I hope that there's no roast duck tonight.
No, they're too greasy.
Yes,
Animal needs some. No, he'll eat anything.
Yes, he's a notorious pizza eater. I think he's scarfing down the pizza here.
I saw him creeping up on the gopher the other day. That scared me.
Poor defenseless gophers. What do you
think? All in all, since we're all typically insane.
Hungry, at least.
Presently.
Now, is this regular, this pizza delivery, or does it happen only occasionally?
It's a regular basis.
That's cool. I think Animal will be showing up more frequently if that's the case.
I live in this bunker. I've never had it before.
So actually, it's not a regular. So it's not a regular aspect of this animal.
Not that I know. Well, this is the first time I've ever had it.
And of course, I don't come to the park too much, but this is the first time I've seen it. Man giving away.
I really appreciate them feeding us like this.
You were talking about cameras showing up around in the park, and you think that this is actually going to be increased surveillance here?
Yes, exactly. I think our government wants our police force wants to catch anybody they can, put them in jail, and for any reason or whatever. And I think we should stop this real quick.
Well, you know, the weather is turning colder. What's your sense of the shelter situation this winter for folks who need shelter?
Well, we got a lot of homeless, and there's not enough bedding or beds open for the homeless. So we're going to have about 1,000 to 1,500 homeless people sleeping on the streets out here. And
you better get a campsite early.
That's right.
Well, there are plenty of empty buildings, but unfortunately they're probably all locked up at night. We may have to liberate a few of those.
Churches and mosques and buildings.
Office buildings at night.
Office buildings.
Banks.
Once a week for Sunday service or something. Now, why are these beautiful million-dollar buildings?
Mayor, I expect you to commandeer those buildings.
I'm going to start taxing them.
That's good. Tax and tax and regulate.
I'm going to tax the Pharisees. The ones that act Pharisee-ish.
I see.
Greedy.
Yes. No, not in Santa Cruz. That would never happen.
Actually, to tell you the truth,
And now that I'm mayor, I can say this with authority that the people of this community have been so good to me, as I've been homeless here for a little over 5 years. So good to me.
Testimony from the mayor of San Lorenzo Park.
Yes, folks, come on down, bring your children. We'll watch our mouths when the kids are here. And come on down and have a picnic. Beautiful day.
Well, I know that there were a number of residents of the nearby buildings who showed up all freaked out at City Council claiming that you guys were, not you guys, but other individuals in this park, perhaps you guys, were doing drugs and scaring the horses, and they were afraid to walk through the park. Just kidding about the horses. You know, but being homeless in an unacceptable way, being visibly homeless, just, you know, looking drunk and all that sort of thing, alcoholic. So what was your response to that concern by the neighbors? Is it unsafe to walk through this park?
No, not when I'm here. Not when animals are here.
Right.
We're always here. It's my job. I'm the mayor.
Well, what about the fights that have occurred between folks and the stabbings and so forth?
Well, those are stupid little things that didn't amount to much. But nonetheless, yeah, you know, you can't... I'm here every day, but I can't keep an eye on everything because I do break up fights and I do intervene.
Now, does that happen like between folks who know each other, or does it happen between like an elderly lady walking through? Was she likely to be assaulted by some bearded alcoholic individual?
I wouldn't happen to know one of those, but hypothetically, you should know one of those. I'd say that the old ladies are safer than anybody in these parks, because we have an old school gang of folks that come here because we're homeless. We have nowhere else to hang out, so we come here, and we've become a family, like a tribe, very close. Anybody here, we're all close together, and it's extended family, by the way. And it's not trying to win anything per se, but just the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Thank you, Mayor. We'll be back for your next report at the next council meeting.
Okay, God bless.
So even as I talk, middle-class bicyclists are riding across the San Lorenzo River Bridge, which I'm walking across, and they aren't getting ticketed. But, of course, they are students. Although students do get ticketed. We have two individuals on bicycles actually chatting with each other on the bridge. Shocking. But they aren't riding them. They're standing there with them.
Sunshine, me. Now don't you dare cry for me. Now I'm on my way, on my way with my friend the wind. Not late last night, the wind came out in and knocking at my door. He banged and he made such a fuss, I couldn't stand no more. I opened the door and I let him in. He said hello, my old friend, let's go flying once again. Thank you. That was such a long time ago. Many things now have changed. I no longer stand with my thumb on the edges, trying to get away. See, I've got my dreams. Now can't you see? Go on and let me be. Let me be like my friend the wind. Now, sweet lady, now don't you cry. Now I'm on my way.
And that's Before the Rain from a CD by our own local CJ Stock. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. These shows are archived at huffsantacruz.org in case you're interested in checking out some of the older ones. Kind of slow tonight, and welcome your calls at 831-427-3772 if you've got stuff you want to talk about. I'm finding it of interest to look over the Capitola police action against protesters protesting against Victoria's Secret's boreal forest destruction, but more important, more important to me, not no doubt to the protesters, is the destruction of the First Amendment at the Capitola Mall, and I'm interested in that issue. Haven't done a lot of research on it recently, but I have been following some of the posts on Indie Media, and it's a very important issue. I was talking today downtown with another local guy, Ken, about the issue of California law and how what kind of rights do we have at in public spaces. Of course, that's one of the issues that I've been very concerned about for the last couple of decades here in Santa Cruz, that the street performers were concerned about, and that I actually did a kind of a training for giving suggestions as to how to deal with police, my suggestions on how to deal with police, if they come and tell you to move along, and different alternative responses you can make. They're out at the Capitola Mall, as you probably know. I think it's probably been covered on other shows, and I have not actually run into someone who is involved in those protests, but it involves the right to picket, to leaflet, to protest at shopping malls. And you know, we talked about this issue when we talked about the case of Jerry Henry, who was an activist out at the Rancho Del Mar shopping mall, a lifelong member of the community out there, who faced a $100,000 bail for a nonviolent protest out there because the merchants there essentially wanted to get rid of them, were going to prove their power, and in collusion with sheriffs and first security guards. And it's been quite a decade long struggle with this guy. And to a lesser extent, you see that downtown in Santa Cruz with the downtown ordinances and that whole situation there, the whole set of laws set up to give the police the power to remove directly and then for long periods of time through probation or restraining orders people who are not playing the game the way the police want you to play it. They may not be violating the law, but they're not playing the game. And, of course, that's really kind of the nub of it, that we have theoretically a set of laws. This isn't, of course, actually true. They're class-oriented laws, but in theory, we have law that which enables all of us to know, to be involved to some extent, to have some say in what goes on, although, of course, we come into a situation where the laws are already made. But we have the power, presumably, through initiative, recall, referendum, a representative government to change them, although without a lot of money and a lot of organization, this, of course, is very difficult. And so the question is, how at the grassroots level do we restore and retain sort of the basic everyday rights that we need to as we go about our business? I mean, it's all very well to get aggravated, as I was this morning when I heard on Amy Goodman about the Senate's latest votes on the compromising away habeas corpus, or continuing to compromise away habeas corpus, the right to be taken before a judge and told what crime you're guilty of, as they, if you're getting locked up for something. In theory, all of us have the right to be taken before a judge and charged, but not the people in Guantanamo, not the, I think it's, is it, what is it, 10,000, 15,000, 60,000, I'm not quite sure how many people are being held or have been held since September 11th, 2001. And, of course, this is this indefinite detention. I've raged about it before, but, of course, what I'm concerned about, we can be concerned about it and should be concerned about it nationally, but when we see sort of a parallel situation locally, as, for example, one man did who was an ACLU member who went to the ACLU meeting last night. There was an ACLU forum at the Loudoun Nelson Center, which I didn't get to, but he did. Nobody spoke about the local issues. There's all this talk about the national problems with a jail and capital punishment and so forth, but nothing about our own jail stuffed to the gills with drug war prisoners or people who have to, you know, run the gauntlet of our own psychiatric system here, or people who are poor who get arrested under the sleeping ban or cited under the sleeping ban or harassed under the sleeping ban. It's old stuff to most of you out there, but going on every night. Well, here's hopefully what is a break. I'm hoping that we can get a few laughs out of this, but let's see how it goes.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Howard Dean Quixote, the man of Vermontia.
I'm Dean, the impossible Dean. I'm back on the national stage. I'll go to each state that we lost in. For stop is the state of enraged. Believe that I will run again and fight for the presidency. Someday I will run this great country. For now, it's the great DNC. That's why the left is counting on me. I never drink decaf, and I'm an MD. But with the state of my party, it said that they don't need a doctor, they need a mortician instead. And I know there are folks who will say I don't have a full deck. And it's weird, but it sometimes appears that I don't have a neck. And the world will get better, or else I might get a little extreme. For now, here's just what you're expecting. I'll scream the impossible scream.
And that, of course, is the Capital Steps, or perhaps the Crapital Steps, as I'm now going to start dubbing them. It's sort of your pale centrist humor. Dean, of course, is a joke in many ways, more ways than one, but not really from my perspective is not that of that song. I did run across something that probably many folks who are listening to this show, some at least, probably know about, the top hawk House Democrat calling for an immediate pullout from Iraq. This, according to the AP, an influential House Democrat who voted for the Iraq war, called Thursday for the immediate withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq, another sign of growing unease in Congress about the conflict. This is the immediate redeployment of American forces because they have become the target, said Representative John Murtha, Democrat of Pennsylvania, one of Congress's most hawkish Democrats. At times during his remarks to reporters, the decorated Vietnam War veteran and former Marine was choking back tears. It is time for a change in direction. Our military is suffering. The future of our country is at risk. We cannot continue on the present course. It is evident that a continued military action in Iraq is not in the best interest of the United States of America, the Iraqi people, or the Persian Gulf region, Murtha said. Murtha, the top Democrat on the House Appropriations Defense Subcommittee, has earned bipartisan respect for his grasp of military issues over three decades in Congress. Apparently not enough grasp of military issues to have come out before this on the issue, but anyway, here he is now. He said announcing a U.S. withdrawal would provide the Iraqi government with an added incentive to have their own security forces take control of the conflict. Murtha is a close advisor to House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, Democrat of California. For months, Pelosi has pushed for the Bush administration to outline an exit strategy, although she has stopped short of calling for an immediate troop pullout. Some Senate Democrats have called for immediate or phased withdrawal. Murtha's comments came just 2 days after the Senate voted to approve a statement that 2006 should be a period of significant transition to full Iraqi sovereignty to create the conditions for the phased withdrawal of U.S. forces. Murtha voted to give the president authority to use force against Saddam Hussein in 2002. In recent months, the top Democrat on the House Appropriations Committee defense panel has grown increasingly troubled with the direction of the war and with the Bush administration's handling of it, particularly following reports of secret CIA prisons in Eastern Europe. That's Romania and Poland, folks. Those are the names of the countries that the Washington Post censored and would not give out, according to Robert Fisk of the London Observer. The war in Iraq is not going as advertised. It is a flawed policy wrapped in an illusion. How about a dirty war crime wrapped in a collusion with the Democratic Party? I don't want to spoil Murtha's tear fest. And I'm glad he's feeling some strong feelings about it and showing them. But, well, no, it's good. It's good that this is happening. I'm not going to say it's bad. Here's another story from anti-war. .com, which I'm reading off of. Senators threaten to hold up Patriot Act. A bipartisan group of senators told congressional leaders Thursday they will try to break reauthorization of the Patriot Act to protest the elimination Senate-mandated protections against unnecessary and intrusive government surveillance in a House-Senate compromise. If further changes are not made, we will work to stop the bill from becoming law. GOP Senators Larry Craig, John Sununu, and Lisa Murkowski, and Democratic Senators Dick Durbin, Russ Feingold, and Ken Salazar said in a letter to the Senate Judiciary and Intelligence Committees. This came a day after House-Senate negotiators crafted a tentative compromise to make most provisions of the existing law permanent and set new 7-year sunsets for rules on wiretapping, obtaining business records under the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, and new standards for monitoring lone wolf terrorists who may be operating independent of a foreign agent or power. Congress is facing two deadlines. Lawmakers want to leave before the end of the week for Thanksgiving, and more than a dozen provisions of the Patriot Act expire at the end of the year if Congress doesn't renew them. The Republican-controlled House hopes to approve the compromise on Friday, and Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist, Republican of Tennessee, told senators Thursday they will have to address the legislation before we leave. I'm not sure what the significance of these six senators is, but here's the story. House Patriot Act deal preserves most provisions. Congress arrives at a deal. House and Senate negotiators reached a tentative agreement Wednesday on revisions to the USA Patriot Act that would limit some of the government's powers while requiring the Justice Department to provide a better accounting of its secret requests for information on ordinary citizens. This is what we call the upbeat Washington Post version by Jonathan Weissman. But the agreement would leave intact some of the most controversial provisions of the anti-terrorism law, such as government access to library and bookstore records and terrorism probes, and would extend only limited new rights to the targets of such searches. For President Bush, renewal of the act would provide a boost as he looks to restore his image as a strong commander-in-chief in combating terrorism. And Democrats said yesterday that the administration largely got what it wanted, a major break after lawmakers challenged the White House in recent days on the conduct of the Iraq War, budget policies, and tax cuts. The deal would make permanent 14 Patriot Act provisions that were set to expire at the end of the year. Three other measures, including one allowing law enforcement agents access to bookstore and public library records, would be extended for 7 years or 3 years longer than the Senate had agreed to. The House initially extended the provisions for 10 years, but later voted to accept the Senate's four-year extension. Also extended for 7 years is a provision allowing roving wiretaps that follow an individual who may use multiple means of communication rather than targeting a single phone line. The agreement also extends for 7 years a provision of a separate intelligence law passed last year that allows federal investigators to track an individual not connected to a foreign government but suspected of operating as a lone wolf terrorist. The compromise would weaken a block of House-approved death penalty provisions that had elicited concern in the Senate and in legal circles. In the event that a jury could not agree to impose the death penalty on a convicted terrorist, President Bush, take note, House Judiciary Committee Chairman F. James Sensenbrenner, or Sensenbrenner, Republican of Wisconsin, had hoped to empower prosecutors to impanel a new jury. The deal also excludes a House proposal to allow a death penalty for terrorist offenses that, quote, create grave risk of death. The agreement does extend the federal death penalty to those who knowingly transport materials used in a deadly terrorist attack, those who help plot a deadly attack on a mass transit system, and those who participate in a deadly attack on ships and maritime facilities. Republicans and Democrats said the agreement is a victory for Sensenbrenner, who defended the expanded government powers enacted after the September 11, 2001 attacks. Civil libertarians and liberal Democrats lamented the deal as another blow to individual rights, and three Democratic senators and three GOP senators declared the agreement unacceptable. We read that story a moment ago, last night. Is Congress standing up to the president? No, not on this one, said Representative Gerald Nadler, New York, a House Judiciary Committee Democrat. The agreement, which could go to final votes in the House and Senate before the end of the week, is Congress's first effort to revise the national security measure that became law just weeks after the September 11th attacks. During last year's presidential campaign, the Patriot Act was elevated to a major political issue, showcased by Bush as a sign of strength in the face of terrorism, but maligned by many Democrats as an abuse of power. Hundreds of local governments have passed resolutions decrying the law as an infringement of civil liberties. When Congress tried to turn to reauthorizing the measure this year, there were bipartisan calls for major changes. House and Senate negotiators have agreed to limit the government's power in some areas while rebuffing the Bush administration's requests for new subpoena powers. But on balance, the compromise sides with a stronger government hand when terrorism investigations clash with civil liberties concerns. But Congress does not look ready to hand Bush all the sweeping powers it was willing to grant in 2001. Negotiators refused to back the administration's request for administrative subpoenas, which would have expanded the government's power to subpoena records without the approval of a judge or grand jury in terrorism investigations. Senate Intelligence Committee Chair Pat Roberts, Republican of Kansas, called that a serious mistake, saying the government already has the powers to investigate non-security issues such as Medicare fraud. We can do it for a dirty doctor, but not a dirty bomber, he said. So perhaps this is one of those provisions that sunsets, because I believe they have that power under an amendment to the Patriot Act passed last year. Administrative subpoenas without having to go to a judge. A November 6th article in the Washington Post revealed that loosened restrictions in the Patriot Act helped boost the annual use of such letters 100-fold to more than 30,000 a year. So, in fact, they have had these letters from about 300 for 30,000 up from 300 before the September 11th attacks. Under the compromise, the Justice Department would have to disclose the number of requests it made for information concerning different targeted people in the United States, but not including the communications subscriber information that make up the bulk of such requests. Not sure about that. Those who receive such letters would be allowed to consult a lawyer and challenge the requests under a new judicial review process. But critics said these controls were more cosmetic than real. A recipient wishing to reveal only the receipt of a security letter would have to prove that disclosure would not harm national security or diplomatic relations or endanger any lives or public safety, while the government can merely assert disclosure would have those effects. So what that means is if they send you a letter demanding your business records, demanding you give them all that stuff, you can't even talk about it unless you can prove that disclosing it would not harm the national security, would not harm diplomatic relations, and would not endanger any lives or public safety. That's, shall we say, guilty until proven innocent. Of course, at the same time, you may remember, the Senate is moving forward and stripped the writ of habeas, well, Bush stripped the writ of habeas corpus away with his presidential actions after 2001 and has been holding hundreds of people who are currently being, some of whom are being force-fed with tubes shoved down their mouths in Guantanamo in Cuba. Hundreds, one might say thousands of others have been or are being tortured abroad without any access to an attorney, a judge, not being charged with anything, and not having access to their relatives, anything of that kind. All this is happening on our watch, folks, while we sit here listening to the radio and contemplating what we're going to be doing tomorrow, because we have the power to do it. The government is torturing people, jailing them without charges, and the Senate is okaying that. The Senate's latest deal was to say last year the courts gave this sort of namby-pamby decision that the people of Guantanamo kind of have the power to go before a court. I don't think many of them have really been successfully able to do that yet, but there have been preliminary attempts to do that. They're still trying to do that. Now the Senate has removed the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court from that case so that the Supreme Court can't uphold the right to have people go before a court to be able to know what they're being charged with. There are some exceptions. If you get 10 years sentence or more, then you can appeal it. And you can appeal your original classification as a, what's it's not foreign terrorist, enemy combatant, that's it. It's a suspension of one of the oldest rights in this country, one of the oldest rights, one of the reasons that the American colonists in the 1770s rebelled was because they were being held without recourse to the courts by British military. And so that was put directly into the Constitution, and the Constitution is being ignored. Unless we assert the Constitution, people in power do what the hell they want. And that includes people in power in Santa Cruz, folks. That includes the police department on Pacific Avenue. When they come to shut down the Safe Performers, as they did a week ago, or actually they just came to investigate an alleged shoplifting incident, but on the way got annoyed, so decided they were going to shut down the performers and tell them to close up their guitar case which they've been using to get some coins, asking for coins from passersby, or leave, based on the false claim that you're not allowed to do that after dark, which you are, even under their stupid laws. Most musicians would have been intimidated and left, I'm afraid. But safe musicians weren't, and my hat's off to them, and they stayed. And they said, take us to jail. And the police backed off. Ironically, they were doing that at the same place within 5 feet of where I was arrested for tabling 3 years ago by Sergeant Lauren Baker. And in that situation, when I was arrested for allegedly blocking the sidewalk, actually, I was circulating a petition saying don't fence off public spaces. That was my deal then. Eventually, a civil lawsuit won $5,000. Half of it went to attorneys, half of it to me. And the problem, of course, with that is it takes years and years. You have to find attorneys, and sometimes attorneys come forward, sometimes they don't. And But it's still possible to stand up and say no, because there's still elements in this community who have some recollection of what constitutional liberty is, or have some vision of it for the future. So stand up for your rights, and when you see others doing the same, witness, be supportive, and well, you can do what you want. When I see officers like Officer Bechtel downtown harassing bicyclists who are driving the wrong way on Pacific Avenue, or harassing someone for unattended property, or sitting down next to a building, my response is to try to inform the community of what a police officer is doing to poor people downtown so that tourists can see the kind of projects that the city council is spending the public money on, and the kind of leeway that the city council is giving officers like Bechtel. you know, when Sergeant Flippo or an Officer Hoppy or whoever comes by and harasses Jason Pascal, not always the most mild-mannered guy. That's the African-American tarot reader down in front of the Cinema 9 area. Tells him, gives him a ticket, which he's still facing court for tarot reading. Arrests him, takes away his stand, takes him to jail. When I see that kind of thing happening, I think it's really important to raise your voice a few notches and come on over and take a look at what's going on. Now, some people adopt a different approach. They believe in kind of simply quietly documenting it and offering your number to support the witness. And I think people should adopt the practice that they find most congenial, whatever you think best suits you. But please try not to remain silent, and please try to be helpful, because without all of us working together on this, we will surely find our rights getting increasingly restricted. And we will surely see this homogenization and gentrification happening downtown, where this becomes a kind of a Carmel North. And that I'm afraid, is what's happening. And again, you know, one place to begin to talk about this is going to be at the Human Rights Organization's meeting at 3:30 on Saturday in the Loudoun Nelson Center. It's going to be food, going to be music, going to be chatter. Some interesting characters will be there. I'll be there. I mean, hey, I'm pretty interesting. Check me out. If you want to talk about these issues on the air, of course you can. The phone number to call in here at 101.1 is 427-3772. And I'd like to hear from you if you feel like doing that. In the meantime, let's hear a little Peggy Seeger. She sings pretty well.
Sing about these hard times. Sing all about these hard old times. Sing about these hard times. When will a good time roll?
I worked hard, I played my part. That's what I did right from the start. But these hard times are gonna break my heart. Oh, when will a good time roll?
Sing about these hard times. Sing all about these hard old times. Sing about these hard times. When will a good time roll?
Life gets harder every year. Those with the least have the most to fear. Those with the most just don't care. Oh, when will a good time roll?
Sing about these hard times. Sing all about these hard old times. Sing about these hard times. When will the times roll?
Big corporations got no home, and the men on the hill got hearts of stone. They worry my life like a dog with a bone. Oh,
when will the times roll? Sing about these hard times. Sing all about these hard old times. Sing about these hard times. When will the times roll?
They moved my job to Mexico, where children slave and the pay is low. And how I'm gonna live, I just don't know.
When will the good times roll?
Oh, the world is ill divided. Those who work most are the least provided.
about these hard times. Sing all about these hard old times. Sing about these hard times. When will the times roll?
That's Peggy Seeger from her album Love Call Me Home. Sing about these hard times. And sing she does. Here's a columnist I find I like. Again, from antiwar.org. This is Justin Raimondo. It's called The Senator's Rebellions. He writes a column every few days called Behind the Headlines. Anti-war momentum is building. Let's put it to good use. The recent Senate vote to require regular reports from the White House detailing all the wonderful progress we're making over there was more reflective of a desire to cover their asses as election time approaches than it was of a growing anti-war sentiment in the U.S. Congress. This was yesterday's vote or the day before's vote, which they rejected a proposal for a timetable and instead said that they would like to start removing troops in 2006, and they wanted regular reports from the president. Raimondo continues, this, after all, is substantially the same group of fools who voted overwhelmingly to authorize the invasion of Iraq in the first place and pretty much stood by and did nothing, even as a majority of Americans turned against the war. What makes this a surprise, however, is that the competition between the two parties was limited during the debate over the resolution to who came up with the idea first. Remember when almost no one dared oppose the war, at least in public, and news anchors were wearing American flags on their lapels as they breathlessly reported our glorious victory? The times, they sure are a-changin'. The Republicans claimed authorship, but this fib was exposed when the Democrats held up a smoking gun, a transcript of their resolution hand-edited by the Republican leadership. Gee, who knew Bill Frist dotted his I's with little hearts? The editing job was pretty perfunctory and included two key points. Instead of commencing 30 days after the passage of the amendment, the reporting requirement would kick in 90 days later. And two, the Democratic proposal required the president to come up with a campaign plan with estimated dates for the phased redeployment of the United States armed forces from Iraq as each condition is met, with the understanding that unexpected contingencies may arise. This last provision was simply struck from the GOP amendment, but the Democrats didn't make too big a fuss. Senator John Warner, co-sponsor with Frist of the Republican proposal, made some noises about how the above provision amounted to cutting and running, but you'll notice the word withdrawal was entirely missing from both amendments. We aren't withdrawing, we're redeploying American troops, and not necessarily back to the United States, perhaps to Syria, or maybe Iran. Just one of those unexpected contingencies, you know? The practical effect of all this negligible legislative vaporware is that may never get out of the product development stage. The House is unlikely to pass it, at least anytime soon, and even if a greatly watered-down version somehow makes it, the measure faces a certain presidential veto, Bush's first. He couldn't bring himself to veto a single humongous spending bill, but when it comes to his unlimited ability to make war, he'll defend that to the bitter end. This is what neoconservatism in power looks like. Increasing big government at home, steadily escalating wars abroad. In short, from a libertarian perspective, we're on a fast track to hell. Our foreign policy of perpetual aggression and endless spending just isn't sustainable. The senators know it too, and that's part of the reason they're delivering this mostly symbolic rebuke to Bush and the war party. Think of a serial killer who goes on a murder spree. He can only keep it up for so long until he begins to slip and make mistakes. Exhausted by the sheer effort expended in so much mayhem, he is ready to be caught. Speaking of getting caught, the timing of this senatorial rebellion is hardly coincidental. You have to ask yourself, what is so pressing about this matter that the Senate felt it necessary to show their defiance now? After all, we've been losing the war for well over a year, and this didn't just recently become obvious. The 2006 congressional elections, although a factor, are still far enough away so that what happens right now won't leave much of a lasting impression. The really big difference isn't anything that happened on the battlefields of Iraq, but what happened in a Washington courtroom on October 28th when a grand jury indicted I. Lewis Scooter Libby on 5 charges of lying to investigators and obstructing an investigation into a conspiracy to divulge classified information. Warner bellows that the Democrats want to cut and run, but he and his fellow senators, not a few presidential and not a few presidential aspirants among them, are running as fast as they can from the messy scandal about to explode like a giant paint balloon, splattering half of Washington. As everyone waits for Patrick J. Fitzgerald's other shoe to drop, maybe on Karl Rove's neck, maybe on a few more members of the neocon coven in the vice president's office, cutting and running is perhaps too kind a gloss to put on it. They aren't just running away from the war they voted for and never publicly questioned until now. They're racing as fast as they can away from the core cadre of the war party in this administration, i.e. the neoconservatives, who are now politically radioactive. Polls show Americans not only think the Libya indictment is a big deal, they also believe that more administration officials, including Vice President Dick Cheney, were involved. The coming election isn't that near, and that's precisely the problem for our lawmakers. The way things are going, campaign season is likely to open at the same time as Scooter Libby's trial, and that prospect is what accounts for Republican movement on this issue. The rationale for war was discredited long ago. Now, however, some of the principal rationalizers are being exposed as liars and worse. It's important to note, however, that the breaking point was reached not when the number of Americans reached the 2,000 mark, but when in Washington they began to smell the blood in the water. As Ahmed Chalabi told Arianna Huffington when the two of them were chilling over sushi in a chic Tribeca restaurant, ultimately we have no friendships, only interests. Interests that boil down to the one and only interest in our nation's capital, the perpetual pursuit of power. As far as I can tell, the sole U.S. senator to sincerely express the slightest intention of withdrawing a single American soldier from Iraq anytime soon has been Russ Feingold, Democrat of Wisconsin. Of course, there's been the other senator who came out after this was written. Feingold was the first to broach the idea of a timetable and one of a minority of Senate Democrats who opposed the war when it really counted during the 2002 vote authorizing the invasion. The rest of them, with the exception of Lincoln Chafee of Rhode Island, an old-fashioned Republican of the more reflective sort, are reflexive warmongers. They abdicated their constitutional responsibility to check the rush to war and are now seeking to place the blame elsewhere. Look not to the Senate for a way out, but to the House, where a bipartisan movement to set a definite timetable for U.S. withdrawal has been percolating for months. Ever since the Homeward Bound resolution requiring that we begin pulling out of the Iraq quagmire no later than October 1, 2006, was introduced in the House this summer. Walter B. Jones of North Carolina, Ron Paul of Texas, and two Democrats, Neil Abercrombie of Hawaii and Dennis Kucinich of Ohio, the Homeward Bound legislation expresses the real sentiments of the grassroots. The most recent polls show that more than half the country wants to withdraw U.S. troops from Iraq within the next 12 months, including one in three of all Republicans surveyed. The big anti-war demonstrations have their place. Certainly the most recent march, organized by United for Peace and Justice, was very visible and effective. Now, however, it is time to mobilize all that energy around the mundane but even more vitally important task of campaigning for the passage of the Homeward Bound resolution. I don't know about that, but certainly can't help hurt supporting it. The wind is behind us. Let's not lose our momentum. Now is the time to move on this issue. It's vitally important you pick up the phone, or better yet, write a letter and send it via snail mail and tell your congressional reps to go with the program, because the war party never rests. They're already working on expanding the conflict to Syria and, incredibly, to Iran. And there's more about this. This is a story by Justin Raimondo. Behind the headlines, actually, it's an opinion column called The Senator's Rebellion.
Shot through the Brian. And meanwhile, on percussion, the ever-beloved Meriwether.
Hey, there he is! Right on, Robert. What's going on? Nice to see you.
Hanging out. It's about
the cruise.
10 after 9. What do you? It looks like a rather populated evening here on the mall. You got your harmonica, drum, Kermit.
Yeah.
And here's your fire hydrant. What more do you need?
I know. We're all set up here just making a little noise, little crafts, a lot of kickdowns.
No arrests yet.
Well, actually, the cops have been rather active. I got two great sweep stories. One, over by the vet hall, here we are playing music on the sidewalk, and there's also music inside on stage. So wouldn't you know it, I leave my stuff outside. Somebody's watching it. I go in and play a couple songs with our lovely Suzanne. And next thing you know, Bob says, the cops are out complaining about your stuff. And I'm like, what? You know, it's been way too long. I kind of figured they were past that. So I went out there, and our dear officer, Pam.
Pam Bechtel, keeping an eye on you as ever.
Yeah, well, they were out earlier or later, her and a friend.
Her confederate.
Right, yeah. They were clearing the corner at Borders, and everybody had to move their bikes. They said the bikes had to go on racks. And one guy was eating. He was sitting down eating some food. And they said, he was too close to the change machine. I mean, it was
too close to a change machine. Rather serious crime down here on Pacific Avenue.
Yeah.
You got to have the police keeping aware of these things. Otherwise, they might happen and be ignored.
Right.
So what did Pam tell you about your stuff out front?
Well, supposedly you can't let people watch your stuff. And that's just kind of lame because everybody does.
I don't think that's actually anywhere in the unattended property law that I'm aware of. I actually happen to have a copy of that law with me, but I haven't read it recently, so I better check it out before leaving my stuff, as I just did a moment ago.
Right. Yeah, I don't know how far is too far or how long is too long. I just think they just, like, launder
certain. The police have gone too far for too long.
Yeah, you got that right. Very good, Robert.
Well, thank you, Musical Mike. I've heard that there's going to be Meriwether Mike, as I sometimes call you. There's going to be some kind of a cop watch, or how do you deal with the police when they come to harass your safe gathering next Wednesday at 6:30? That we're going to train you. You're going to be the police officer and get to come and arrest all of us.
Oh, okay. Role play, yeah.
A little role playing.
Okay.
Brian is here illegally putting his foot on the planter, I noticed. This is a shocking display. And this is a religious man. I don't know what to say.
Yeah, well, you're right.
Lots of activity Friday night here on the mall. We're approaching New Leaf. The drummers are surrounded by at least 38 people, looks like. And they're a drumming and a humming and a woman and a bumming. And what do you think of these drummers?
They patchy, but they sound good, though.
Dig it. It looks like at least four guys on drums, attracting the attention of at least two babies in baby carriages, youths of all sorts, older women drinking coffee, younger women simply observing. Passing by. We got first Brent on his big drum. We got a man on a collection of smaller, barrels and buckets and pots and pans of various kinds. And of course, there's a hat with some money in the middle of it all. I'll have to donate to that. And across the street, actually, I'm quite a ways away from it. You can hear some even more serious percussion going on in front of the World Market Bazaar across the street from the Irish Pub. And it's, again, we have a crowd, kind of a smaller crowd, got xylophone guys going wild and crazy on the xylophone. These guys are, hey, they got darker skin. These look like black guys to me. And again, we have children, adults, people sitting illegally on the sidewalk within 10 feet of a building. It's a shocking display, but right on. And here's a man playing guitar in front of Jackson Shoes. Let's listen in. Listening to you play guitar. And we move here to the man with the piano in front of Del Mar Jewelers. A little music is about to issue forth here, we hope. It's a tiny tape recorder. Piano. And we're listening to the music of
James Bender.
Thanks, James. And we must pause briefly for some technical shifts here, but don't go away. Actually, it's almost time to go away, because we're reaching the end of the show, but perhaps another interview before we go. I will be coming back on Sunday, 9:30 in the morning, if you want to pick things up then, if any of this has interested you, and if you want to perhaps call in and get some of your own thoughts on what's been going down. Maybe you'll be attending you'll come from the Human Rights Organization's meeting on Saturday, the feed, the forum, and the street art show, and the activist politics and homelessness event that's happening at Loudon Nelson from 3:30 to 6. You might want to check that out. And in between times, if you've got anything to report you want put on the air, give a call to the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833.
So it's about 10 to 11 on November 12th, Saturday morning, a sunny day on Pacific Avenue, and what do I see but three police officers, Ann Bechtel, a sergeant, and another female officer, chatting with a guy on a bike with a skateboard. So I thought I'll sort of listen in here and see what's happening.
He's got to do the whole door.
Yeah, it looks like a detention here. I'm not entirely sure what's happening.
Okay, then I'm going to change my...
It's picking up one squad car and the time of three police officers. Looks like Jeff Jam is here on his bike waiting. And I, of course, am risking arrest by putting my foot on the lip of a planter while doing a cop watch. Here.
Yeah. Quiet, that's a small part.
And we hear a casual conversation between Officer Bechtel and Officer Bynes while they wait here for goodness knows what. And Officer Bynes looks out her ticket book.
You were slipping there for a second, huh?
He's writing a ticket. That champ does not look too happy.
Oh. Yeah. I'm trying to get better
to the and the officers are having friendly and casual conversation here. Well, looks like, again, not clear what's going on, and I
notice the squad car is, of course. Squad car 120 parked in a red zone. Another bicycle cop, and of course, Pam Bechtel, also standing here, waiting.
And the victim there is a man who is who's deaf and speech impaired, who was the individual who police used to, well, you could say he precipitated, or they used him as a cause to precipitate what I call the jaywalking massacre of two years ago in the summer of 2003. Seven squad cars blocked Pacific Avenue and other streets because people who were hanging out in front of Borders, one of them was this guy who I call Def Jam, that's his name, he crossed the street, which police what police described as jaywalking, and of course on Pacific Avenue you can't really jaywalk. You can cross wherever you want, and it's only jaywalking if you actually step in front of a car and obstruct a car. The other definition of jaywalking is if you cross on a busy intersection between two stoplights when there's no intervening streets instead of using the crosswalks. But that's not the case on Pacific Avenue. In any case, there was a huge police action that resulted. I think 13 or 14 people were given citations for jaywalking. A number of people were taken to jail. It was a real cause... a real clown show that happened downtown, and it happened around the same individual who is very hard of hearing, and I think the police were offended that he didn't respond as quickly as he should have. At least that was the account I got. We actually followed that case on Free Radio and the case of Bajani Romero, who actually took the case forward. Everyone else pled guilty eventually, but he kept going back to court, and eventually, with so many court dates and as a homeless person, it became difficult for him to keep up with it. And this particular citation that we just heard on the air, I was unable to get a lot of detail about it, but I just noted you had three police officers giving one man on a bike a ticket. And it seemed typical to me, downtown Santa Cruz, typically abusive and typically unnecessary. But again, I was, in this case, typically ignorant, so I can't really make more comments on it than that. Thank you for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Coming next on Free Radio, as if I'm not mistaken, is From the Cream to the Dregs. Uncle Dennis should be coming in shortly. Until he does, I'm going to give you a little more Peggy Seeger, and hope to hear from you again, or perhaps for the first time, since we had, I think, one phone call during this particular show. But you're welcome to call in again on Sunday, and again, as I said, between times, call me on the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and I will get back to you.
Slack up your rope, slack it for a while. I look over yonder and I see Pa coming for many a mile. Say, Pa, have you run me no gold to pay my fine? No, sir, brung you no gold to pay your fine. I've just come for to see you hanged all on the gallows line. Hangman, slack up your rope, slack it for a while. I look over yonder and I see Ma coming for me. Say, Ma, have you brung me no gold to pay my fine?
No, sir, no, sir, brung you no gold. Gold to pay you fine. I just come for to see you hanged all on the gallows line. Your rope, slack it for a while. Look over yonder, see my true lover coming, coming for many a mile. True love, I stretch my hand to thee. No other help I know. If you withdraw your hand from me, oh, whither shall I go? True love, have you brung me no gold? Gold to pay my fine. Yes, sir, brung you some gold. Gold to pay your fine. I've not come for to see you hanged all on the gallows line. Be loved. Hard to make up your mind. You've broke the heart of many poor girls. True love, but you won't break mine.
On the No, people care for people. We think of the love. We sing the tune them in the church. The black people that sing them, you know. Who is the spiritual people upon earth? The black people. Them are dealing with God, and God not let them down. God dead there. And God said them to unite. Because when you unite, that is the power of God.
The music is militant. Its beat moving. Its message just as moving.
Yes, friends, indeed. You're tuned into Freak Radio 101.1 FM, streaming live at www.freakradio.org. I'm Uncle Vinny, sitting in here tonight for From the Cream to the Dregs. Uncle Dennis is not with us tonight, although he will hopefully be back next week, although he'll probably do a special as he usually does on Thanksgiving, as it is next week, Thanksgiving. So, coming to you tonight, I'm a little late getting into the studio, and we have successfully evacuated Robert Norse, Bathrobes, Pierre's, Broadsides, another fine show from the Robed One. And you can tune in again on Sunday at 9:30 a.m. for another edition of Bathrobes, Pierre's, Broadsides. And tonight, though, as I am sitting in for Uncle Dennis, I will not be doing a number of the features that Dennis usually brings you, first of which, of course, is the Earth First News Report, which happens around 9 p.m. I don't have any updates from the environmental activism world for you tonight. And I also will not be doing Uncle Dennis's Rant, which I think happens around 10 p.m. Although, one tradition we are sticking with tonight, of course, is the Brew of the Week. And this week's brew of the week, of course, comes to us from a store we'll just call TJ's. It's called Fat Weasel Ale, and it's at a great price right now. I highly recommend it with its 7.1% alcohol content. A fine brew, Fat Weasel Ale, brewed and bottled by Steinhaus Brewing Company out of Paso Robles, California, for the TJ's brand, Fat Weasel Ale. So that'll be our brew of the week tonight. And Uncle Vinny will be sipping more than one brew of the week. Although he encourages you not to drive drunk if you're going to be imbibing in your own brew of the week or other alcoholic beverages, please stay out of your cars. You should just stay out of your cars anyway, but that's another story. So anyway, tonight coming up on the show, we'll be doing sort of a theme show, and I'm going to kind of get started here in a moment with that, and you can maybe, as we progress along, maybe you'll figure out the theme as we go. So let's get started right now tonight on From the Cream to the Dregs. Stay tuned to Freak Radio, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org.